I'm Ruthie, host of Out There, here on Valley Free Radio. Tune in for stories from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond, Fridays from 4 to 5 p.m. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. And thanks for tuning in today. It's Friday, April 14th, 2023. It says the calendar. Who knows what day or time it really is in the universe. But anyway, for today's show, I have a bunch of recordings as usual. I have an interview with my friend Gabor. I went to his house in Amherst today to harvest bamboo. I have an interview with Adele and some of the JFK Bike Club boys. And I have an interview with Pablo and Yomaira about dance spirit or dance. I think it's dance spirit that happens on Sunday mornings at the Williamsburg Grange, and also swimming at Musante Beach on Easter Sunday. And some stories. But first, I'll play like a minute's worth of clips right here. Hey, has anyone heard the birds singing at 4:30 in the morning? They're real excited this past week. They've been very excited. Oh, wait a minute. That was the wrong button. I don't know why I would play a recording of birds when like the real thing live sounds so much better. Oh, well, there's technical difficulties here. Well, then, Angelique Kidjo and Jesse Wilson will save me.
Got to understand what happens from here is in our hands. From mighty kingdoms of a distant land, turn the world upside down, yes we can. We just gotta rise up, woo, rise up, keep rising, woo, rise up, woo, rise up, woo, rise up, keep rising, woo, rise up. No, no, yeah, no, 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 yeah, no, 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 yeah, no. Been marching so long, how far is it to get to where we're going? Don't you know together we are strong? We're gonna fight the madness till it's gone. We just gotta rise up.
From the movie The Woman King. Let's try these clips here again. nothing will have changed, but okay, I double click on the clips and it says you are about to start playback. Do you want to clear the song previously added? I guess I'll hit.
My name's Simone Crow. I am Francis's granddaughter, and my whole family's traveled back here to bury her ashes and celebrate her life. And we were wondering a couple of hours ago where the vigil was, and I'm just so delighted to see you all out here still.
Cool, thanks. Yeah. Nice reminder of Francis.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice to meet you. Thanks.
Nice to meet you too. Bye.
That clip was from this past Saturday. I just happened to be leaving the Peace Vigil on my way to Bike Lab, and on the intersection of Main and King, I overheard a conversation that was between Simone Crow, who I've never met, talking about burying Francis's ashes. So that was exciting. Francis Crow, who was instrumental in getting Democracy Now! To Western Massachusetts and many other things as a peace activist. So on my way to the studio here today, well, it was actually on my way back from Amherst. So I went to Amherst to Gabor's house, got all this bamboo. I have an interview with Gabor in a minute, but coming back. Okay, the point of this story is my latest excuse as to why I'm not totally prepared. The big reason is because really I just want to ride my bike. But the little excuse reasons are, so I was coming back today with this load of bamboo and coming from Amherst. It's a long trip. Took me quite a while. And I'm putzing away about midday, 1:30, coming up the rail trail through Northampton. And I come to where that triangle is of green space, parking lot, road crossings, rail trail crossings of North Elm and Hatfield Street. Often there's cars or trucks parked in that triangle. Sometimes people will park there with bicycles and unload their bikes to ride on the rail trail. But when I came to that place with my little trailer and 15-foot bamboo sticking out front and back and left and right, a little unwieldy, and I'm coming through there, and I see there's a police car parked in the triangle. There's another police car parked on Hatfield Street. There's another, like, this white car there. There's a couple women talking to a police officer on the rail trail by Hatfield Street, and there's a black man standing against one of the cars. And I was like, police, black man, this is a good time for a water break. So I stopped. I actually had some grapefruit fresh from the Aldi's dumpster. And I was like, oh, a grapefruit. That'll take a nice long time to peel and eat while I just stand here. And then it seemed a very chill situation. Like, it just seemed like people were just kind of standing around talking. And then I heard the black man say something to the cops. And all of a sudden I was like, wait, I know that voice. I know what he's talking about. Hey, that's my friend. And so I went over to talk with him and see. Like, I knew that he had been in some distress lately. And so I wasn't too surprised to see the whole situation, but I had no idea what was going on. And I told the cops, I was like, oh, it's my friend. Can I bring him some water? Because I just wasn't sure. Like, sometimes when there's, like, cops around, you don't know. Like, can you just, like, walk up to whoever they're talking to? The cop was, like, 15 feet away at that time. And like I said, it seemed very chill. And then it turned out that one of the women the other cops was talking to across the street was someone else that I know. And, to make the long story short, I think the situation, we all concluded that the situation was being resolved in the best way that we could think of. Oh, and another of the cars there was for the community response outreach person that the city council or the city or organizers that are now working with the police when there's, like, mental health crises. So that responder was out there trying to figure out how to deal with the situation too. But anyway, yeah, it was pretty funny. I mean, for me, it was funny to just be like, should I observe? Wait, I know these people. So anyway, that's my excuse why I wasn't prepared, totally prepared. Anyway, no more excuses. because we all know I really just want to ride my bike. So next, I guess on that note, here is a bike club interview.
What's your name? Roman.
And what grade are you in?
8.
At JFK. And how did you decide to join bike club this year, this spring?
I have a pretty generous passion about biking and stuff, and I wanted to learn how to repair things and add on to what I knew.
Cool. Did you learn anything?
I mean, fortified the knowledge.
I love an honest person. How do you see yourself using bikes in the future?
I don't know, biking around, biking for work, biking to school.
And what's your favorite thing about bike club?
Riding bikes, fixing bikes, fun stuff.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
Why is riding in there?
What's your name?
Xavier Greenberg.
And why did you decide to join bike club?
Because my dad told me to.
Did you enjoy yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have any favorite parts?
Yeah, I like biking around.
Did you learn anything new?
Kinda.
Would you recommend it to anyone else?
Yeah, I would say so.
What kind of person do you think would enjoy bike club?
Someone who has a bike.
Hi, I'm Gunther.
And why did you join bike club?
I joined bike club because I needed something to do after school, and I like to ride bikes and race cyclocross a mountain.
Was it hard for you when we went on rides to ride slower than you're used to?
Yes.
What's your favorite speed?
Very fast.
Like 22 miles an hour?
Around there. Maybe 30.
Was there anything new for you at bike club that you learned?
A little bit. I learned how to check your bike before riding. Normally I don't do that. Normally I trust my dad that he went over my bike correctly.
And
is there anything you wish that we could have done we didn't get to do?
Not really. I had a blast. It was really fun. Maybe, yeah, I don't know, really.
Sounds like we nailed it, Ruthie.
Well, Chris said going into it, it's a club and it's supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
It's not bike school. Just like have fun and hopefully you'll learn something.
Yeah.
Well, Adele, how was bike club?
We just had our final session.
Number 8 of 8.
8 of 8. We did all 8. We weren't sure if you were going to be in town. And I was like, I can't do it without you. But luckily it all worked out.
Yeah.
I think it went really well. I think once I just like relaxed and was like, okay, with us just riding and having fun. And
well, because they asked for a whole 8-week curriculum.
There was a
lot
of pressure. There was a lot of, I was like, I feel like the people who proposed it were like, really wanted us to teach them how to fix everything on their bike, how to earn a bike, which is like a whole program where you fix bikes and then you earn one after you do enough hours. And we quickly realized that was like probably not going to happen in this situation, but.
I mean, most of them had nicer bikes than any bike at the bike lab that they would have earned.
Yeah. So I think that they happened to have bicycles. One student was able to borrow a bike, but I don't think having a bike was a barrier.
Yeah.
Which was good.
So can you say anything more about feeling like planning all these things ahead, wanting to be prepared every time?
Yeah.
And then just going with it.
Adjusting, adapting. So Bike Stop Moms has this whole program that's pretty in-depth. And the person who proposed that we do this was encouraging us to do that kind of thing. And then we realized that, you know, we had to really scale it back. So I think our goal was to just at least teach them the ABC quick check, air brakes, chain, quick release. And we did that. I don't know, maybe they'll remember it.
Oh, we forgot to sing the...
We forgot to sing the song. Should we sing the song right now?
Yeah.
Air brakes, chain, and quick release. Check these things before you leave. Tire pressure on the side. Brakes that grab the rim real tight. Chain don't squeak, it's lubed inside. Quick release us for a ride. I am fine with us not singing that to the kids. I was thinking they'd be so embarrassed if we sang that to them. And then maybe that would burn it into their memory forever and they would never forget the ABC Quick Check, so maybe it would have been good, but I don't know. That was great. Honestly, my favorite part about this experience has been, other than riding with the kids, has been you and me hanging out and figuring out, what are we going to do? Because we would come up with all these great ideas, and we would do, like, maybe a third of them, and that would be fun. And now we have ideas for other things in the future, too. Yeah. It's just been good to, like, think about how to teach. How do you teach? What's effective? You don't know until you try it.
Yeah.
How have you been feeling about all of it? How's your experience?
So when we went by my house today with the kids...
Yeah, tell us about that.
Okay, so for the club's only an hour long, which feels so short. And so when we went by my house, I wanted to show them all these things, but I also didn't want to take too long. And, you know, there's four boys today and going off in four different directions sometimes. Because, you know, they're interested in different things, and that's cool. But when we present something, or when I'm talking with them as a group, or like when they're at my house today, it's like I have no idea how to gauge if something is interesting to them. You know, because they're just kind of like, I'm like, oh, check this out. And they're like, eh. And I'm like, oh, what's going on inside that head? I have no idea.
And are they... seeing it and taking it in and not responding, but maybe filing it away. Like the solar oven.
Yeah.
I mean, they wanted to ask you about the solar oven.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you can't control the temperature. And you were like, actually, it doesn't get too hot in there.
Yeah. I didn't say, you can control it by opening the door.
Oh.
I have a really hard time thinking on the spot.
That's okay. And then the rain barrels. You showed them the rain barrels, and then I think one of them said, oh, my mom does that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool, to make a connection.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think I have this burden of having to reach everyone all the time. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it's like you might reach one person one part of the time and make a connection. And that's, I don't know, that's something.
Yeah. I also just appreciate making friends, connections with younger people, because I'm not that connected with younger people in my everyday life. Mm. I don't have kids. So it's really, for me, it's really special to know some of my neighbors, like Gus and Gunther and Bishop. Like, they all live in my line of travel.
Yeah.
And so, like Gus and I, see each other almost every day, it seems like. Not every day, almost every week, it seems like we've run into each other around town in between bike club, which is really cool. So now, hopefully if I see Bishop, I'll be like, oh, that's Bishop. He lives basically one block from my house.
Yeah.
I'm happy to make these connections. One day, I was doing Pedal People. I was out at Valley Recycling throwing paper in the paper compactor. And there's two doors to the paper compactor. Most residential people drop off. All the residential people drop it off in one of the doors. Within the opposite door is where Pedal People drops off. And so sometimes you'll be we'll be throwing in paper directly across from someone in the other door, like a little tunnel looking through.
Oh, okay.
And one day I was dumping paper, and the guy that was dumping in the other side, he was maybe 20, 21, and he was like, hey, didn't you teach second grade bike club at Jackson Street School a long time ago?
And he remembered me. He was a second grader?
He was a second grader at that
That's
time.
Amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. That's amazing.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Oh, that very last, those last 10 seconds, that was from a group of bikers in Trinidad last year. That was the Trinidad Bike Boy interview. Anyway, what was I going to say? Lost the thought. Well, I guess I was just... Okay, so that was the bike club that Adele and I did this spring at JFK Middle School here in Florence. I guess I have a little trash story of the week. So this week, my housemates and I have been doing some deep cleaning in the basement and all over the house. And that's included vacuuming all the cobwebs up, all the cobwebs in the basement. Who knew you could vacuum up all the cobwebs in the basement? I don't vacuum very, very much, but that's like an amazing machine. It's like a love-hate relationship I have with the vacuum cleaner. It's amazing what it's like flying. Flying is such an amazing thing, but it's not good to set up a life or a culture around it. But anyway, so we were trying to vacuum, and we don't actually have one of those attachments where it's got like the brushy things on the end and a small hole. So we wish we did. Actually, there was one that I found in the free pile, but it wasn't the right size. It didn't slip in the right way. So I just had to wrap it up with tape and kind of held it on when I used it. And that worked well enough. But then, so then the next day, I'm out doing my pedal people route, and I'm picking up at Nancy Cohen's, and I pull up and I'm dumping her cans and bottles recycling into my trailer, and in the bottom of it is a vacuum cleaner attachment thing, just like what I was looking for. And so I pulled it out. I was pretty excited. And then Nancy comes out and she was like, "How'd I do sorting the trash and recycling today? I'm trying to do it well, she said. And I was, for a minute, I was like, okay, should I be like a perfectionist and tell her she had one thing wrong that wasn't properly sorted in the recycling? And I still had the attachment in my hand. I was like, well, I guess I should just be honest, right? And I said, oh, it was great, except for there was this one thing that was in the containers that should be in the trash. And she said, my vacuum cleaner attachment, you found it. Wow, thank you. All right. On that note, here's a couple of bird notes. Ooh, that was like 4:30 in the morning in our backyard, front yard, side yard, house. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, for my next thing. You know, I'm going to play Buffy St. Marie, Starwalker. Buffy St. Marie off the album Running for the Drum. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Out There airs Fridays from 4 until 5, followed by Democracy Now! Up at 5 o'clock, preceded by a rerun of Occupy the Airwaves from 3 to 4, and Blame It on the Blues from 1 to 3. My next clip here for today's show is from a couple of friends that I went dancing with at the Sunday morning dance spirit at the Williamsburg Grange. Today is Sunday. Easter Sunday. Yeah. Chloe's been chasing down Easter eggs. How many Easter eggs did you find, Chloe? How many did you hide, Pablo?
How many did I hide? Maybe, I didn't hide them.
Oh, the Easter bunny. The Easter bunny.
I saw him hide about 10.
So, my name is Yomaira.
And Yomaira and I met at Dance Spirit?
Yes.
This is your first time?
My first time ever, yes. It was beautiful. It was so welcoming. And I got to get in touch with my inner child.
And then after the dance, you came to Musanti Beach, mm-hmm. Easter Sunday, yes. April, early April.
Yes.
How hot is it? How cold is it?
I don't know. I think it's right now in the 50s or 40s.
Yeah, it was 26 last night, I think.
Yeah, but the sun is up, so it's not that intensely cold.
So people jumped in the
cold water.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you go in?
And I did, for the first time ever, doing something like that. And I had a lot of support, moral support from Ruthie.
Which I had a lot of moral support from the other 8 people or however many that jumped in. I wasn't going to do it.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going to do it. When I saw that you weren't going to do it, I was like, I'm not going to do it. She's not going to do it. Yeah. We can do it.
Yes. And we did it together. It was amazing. I was scared at first, but then I was able to enjoy it. And I feel pretty good.
Did you get chilled?
In the beginning, yes, it was a shock. I couldn't breathe for a little bit. But then I came out and everything was fine. I was okay. I did not die.
Do you recommend it? Do you recommend it for others?
Yes. Please do it. You get a high of dopamine afterwards. So yes.
And it's all natural out in nature.
Yes. Definitely.
Pretty much all natural except for the dam.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, we shared a beautiful picnic and
some monkey in the middle.
And got some monkey in the middle. A couple monkeys in the middle. No, I don't know what you were saying earlier, but it was beautiful to not just do the dance together, but to have this picnic and get together here on the beach. Yeah, for me the dance, I've realized it's so beautiful to have a communal experience, but that's silent or like without words, but yet like with actual contact and connection. Meditation used to be this idea of like the communal experience, like a group meditation, but what it was missing for me was the physical or the body experience and the actual connection and contact with other people. So I'm really happy to have found this practice. Just starting to grow in it.
And
thank you.
What's the age range, would you say, of people that come for the dance?
Thank you. Hey, it's all the generations.
Because you often come with your 5-year-old daughter?
Yep, I come with my little daughter. And she makes friends, has friends there who are even younger. There's babies, infants that just sit on blankets and rock back and forth. And there's toddlers that hop around, and preschoolers that run around, and there's even sometimes even older kids, not teenagers I've seen, but too cool for that. But yeah, maybe all the way up to 10 or so I've seen. Uh-huh. And then there's also, you know, older people with more limited movement abilities, but still like bringing the whole, yeah, like embodying the spirit of communal dancing. And thank you. And yeah, so all the generations and beautiful atmosphere that's created there.
Thank you. Yeah, that one song the DJ played that was a little more like heavy metal like, and one of the older guys like was sitting in the back holding his ears, just like because the tone or the pitch or something was like really
too
like, hurt his ears. The volume of that pitch hurt his ears.
Yeah, today was different because it was a DJ. Usually it's live music, which also allows a little more interaction between the musicians and the people dancing. And also it doesn't it's not songs that start and end, but it's like a continuum of music that just adapts to the atmosphere and evolves. It's improvised. So often it's surprising and unexpected, and today was a different experience in that sense with the DJing.
Thanks, Pablo. Thanks for inviting me. So that was Pablo and Yomaira that I ran into at Dance Spirit in Williamsburg. Dance Spirit happens Sunday mornings from 10 until 12 at the Williamsburg Grange, and it's free or suggested donation of, I don't know, as much as you want, I guess. 5, 10, 20, 30 bucks. And here's the song that was played at Sunday's dance that I liked and wanted to play. This is Macy Gray.
No.
Thanks for listening to Out There Today and Macy Gray. Democracy Now! Comes up at 5 o'clock. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Next, we have an interview with Gabor Lukacs. I'm not sure how to say his last name, sorry. But he's Gabor, who lives in Amherst, right near downtown. Rides a bike everywhere. He's got lots of bamboo. Has all sorts of bike contraptions that he's made. And he invited me, or I invited myself, over to his place this morning to gather bamboo for some gardening projects for this year. It's Friday, April 14th, 2023. I'm here at Gabor's place getting some bamboo. Gabor, you have quite the bamboo stand here. How much bamboo would you say you have?
Oh, I don't know. I have maybe 10 of these or 9 of these.
Like stands, big stands?
Yeah. Okay. Groves, as they
groves.
Call it.
Groves. Yeah. Right, yeah, we're here in Amherst. Thanks for donating to the cause. Does it ever get out of control for you?
Oh, it's always out of control.
Do you remember when you first planted it?
But you can't really control nature.
Yeah.
I planted these little 3-foot, very tiny, tiny, smaller than my finger, little finger, for probably 18 years ago or 16 years ago. Uh-huh. And the interesting growth pattern of the bamboo is that the newest cone emerges over the ground the year that it grows to full stem, full height. So each year, the new bamboo would be larger. And then hard winter comes, like we had just a really cold temperature this winter one night, and that really damages the bamboo. Uh-huh. So then there's harvest, and some of the cones are smaller, like these thinner ones, and some of them are larger. These are probably older, like 2 years old or 3 years old. And the newest ones are these, the thickest ones.
Uh-huh. So the smaller ones are like finger thick or smaller.
Yeah.
And then the bigger ones are like a couple inches in diameter maybe?
Yeah, I would say 1.5 inches. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if 1.75, probably less than 2.
Yeah. Cool. It's funny that I said out of control. Such a human thing. We want to control nature, huh?
Yeah. And it's always overwhelming. I'm also learning a lot about the masculine and feminine energy. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we learn about it is that everything that's alive is feminine in nature. Uh-huh. Not female, but feminine in nature. Uh-huh. We each have masculine and feminine energies. Uh-huh. But the feminine is like a storm. Mm-hmm. It or the weather. Many times it's peaceful, but then sometimes it's out of control for us. And the masculine is more like on the consciousness type. They don't even want to deal with all that much nature. Uh-huh. So that it can get quite overwhelming because it's energy. It's an alien, thing.
Uh-huh. Huh. So Gabor, we were also talking this morning about your involvement with the Peak,
what is Prosperity. Peak Prosperity.
What's that?
Which is a website that is set up for all kinds of resiliency, a lot of financial, but also emotional and physical resiliency. Resiliency is a quality of how bounce backable you are. Mm-hmm. Something happens, and can you come back from that? Can you face it easily? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how does that affect you in the short and long term. Uh-huh. And I'm into emotional resiliency, which is, I think, the basis for a lot of those things. And it helped me a lot in my life. Mm-hmm. And it's not without work. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's also a community that attracts very different kind of people. Mm-hmm. I feel so insular in Amherst, in this intellectual kind of very left community. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I don't fit in, well, as a Hungarian probably I don't fit in fully, but but I'm not standing out always. But I really like to get exposed to different people, and that crowd is quite different. Mm-hmm. And the conference I went to this fall has attracted people from all different states and all different countries. Uh-huh. So there was somebody from Australia, I believe, a couple of people from my region. I'm from Hungary originally. They weren't from Hungary, so we couldn't talk Hungarian, but they were from the old area of Yugoslavia, quite a few of them. One was from Romania. It's all fairly close to where Hungary is.
And the things that you have in common, where you feel bonded with each other through this group, what could you share about that?
Some of the people, it was hard to, there was such a variety in, there were hundreds of people there, there was such a variety. And I always noticed that originally we are kind of semi-bonded in like an open crowd, but when something happens that affects everybody, the whole group gets more bonded. Like during this, it was a campsite, it was like this really nice large tent set up for the presentations, and the food somehow was terrible. It was just so bad. And that was a really good bonding experience with people, because we got to talk about how that is just really bad. Everyone agreed, even the people who provided it. It was basically just noodles, you know. like those corner piece noodles in cheesy sauce.
Oh, like mac and cheese?
Yeah, yeah.
Macaroni?
Yeah. It was that for 3 days.
I want to go back to something you said about resiliency and bouncing back and out of control, and how, like, this bamboo is incredibly resilient. It bounces back. Does it bounce back? Is it resilient or is it out of control?
Well, in a way, it's all of them.
Yeah.
It's vulnerable because if the temperature gets down to, say, -5, -10 degrees, the above part of the bamboo dies. The ground, there is still a rhizome system below the ground that lives on, but the above part does. So that's what happened. There was one night when it was -10 degrees and many of my bushes died.
And
all of them got somewhat damaged, like leaf damage, but not maybe corm damage. But at the same time, it's more resilient than a tree, because a tree might break, and that's the end of the life often of the tree, like in a wind. Bamboo can break, but like in Puerto Rico, there was this hurricane, bamboo broke, everything broke, of course, it's flattened the whole rainforest. But then the bamboo grew back 20 foot a year, basically, which is quite a bit of growth spurt. And more sun, because that's many times happens that in a forest, if a damage happens, then new vegetation is able to come in to replace the whole, the sunny area. And bamboo is a good thing here. It's not at home, and that's why it can get damaged. But because it's not at home, it also has less parasites and can live a healthier life.
So when the cold comes and dies it back, then what do you do with all that woody matter?
Create community.
Give it to your friends and neighbors. For gardens.
And do different projects. Like I have made several bicycle trailers. I'm into bicycling. Don't have a car. And you saw some of the trailers. And also I made a couple of bicycles. Actual bicycles.
Out of the bamboo that you grew?
Out of the bamboo. Yeah. Have you seen those?
I think I have. I've seen one.
Okay.
So if the cold kills it, so how does it affect the resiliency or the durability of a bamboo cane if the cold has killed it versus if the cold hasn't and it's, you just harvest it and it's, I don't know, healthy, unkilled living? I don't know. How do they, what, I don't know that much about the life cycle, the process of it. When is the strongest bamboo? Like if you're building a bike trailer or a bike out of bamboo, can you use one that's been killed by cold, or does it need to be aged?
Oh, I see what you mean.
Way?
So, at first, when the bamboo comes out, it's full of a cane comes out from the ground. It's full of nutrients. It's flexible,
green,
it's
and
kind
living,
of floppy, and a lot of juice is going on.
Yeah.
So that's, it's not hard yet.
Yeah.
Later on, it fills up with silica, and also it has less and less sugars in it. So after a couple of years, the bamboo cane, the same cane that grows to full size the first season, but then lives for about 10 seasons after that, it gets progressively less full of nutrients. Uh-huh. So it will be less nutritious to different parasites, borers, whatnot. Uh-huh. And also to rotting, which is a microbial thing. And probably year 3 to year 5, mm-hmm. or year 6 maybe, is when the best. Mm-hmm. Because after that, it's like natural damages and whatnot weakens the bamboo cane, uh-huh. the individual cane. The whole bamboo patch, the grove, lives until it flowers. Mm-hmm. And that might be 17 years, it might be 150, 9 years.
Uh-huh. How long would you say the longest bamboo is here?
Maybe 20, 25 feet are the tallest ones. These are types that can grow 70 feet, but when a cold winter comes, it weakens the whole patch, yeah. and it has to regrow from scratch. So then it starts out to be just, you know, 6 feet tall or 4 feet tall in the first year, and then larger and larger canes come up. I have had 3 winters where it didn't, not much of my bamboo died, so now I have some larger canes. Huh. Larger canes is like 1 1/4, 1 1/2, 1 3/4 inches.
Uh-huh. Huh. Do you want more takers for your bamboo?
Sure, anytime. There is a lot here. And you can build different garden equipment, like trellises for cucumbers or mm-hmm. even tomatoes. Mm-hmm. It looks quite different than a stick, you know, uh-huh. a wood stick, because yeah. it's so, I guess, different looking. It's always round.
Yeah.
It always have internodes, and it has little side branches which make it easier to mount something onto.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. many times I don't fully cut it off at the stem, uh-huh. but a little later, so I leave like 1/2 inch there, so.
Yeah. So let's say if you, I don't know, say you have like 1/2 acre of bamboo here and you cut it all to the ground right now, what would it look like by like August or September if you just mowed it all down? But not well.
Oh, if I just cut everything down.
Yeah.
Well, the new canes would come out probably in 2 weeks, uh-huh. start to bud. You can eat many of them. Uh-huh. Like they are edible. Uh-huh. They're not the easiest to eat and maybe not the tastiest, but they're nice and crunchy, like bamboo shoots in a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
And I think the full size would be if I cleared everything, whether they died or not in the winter. If I cleared everything, then they have to do it from scratch. The full size probably would be 6 to 8 feet.
Yeah.
Or maybe even smaller.
Yeah.
At the first year. So it would be much more like a little bit of a wasteland, because there is no grass, there is no greens underneath. Bamboo always drops something. Every season, it either drops damaged leaves or it doesn't really have a fall, uh-huh. because it's evergreen. But then damages happen, so it has a spring fall, and consequently the ground is always covered with whatever droppings it has, whether it's the leaves, or whether it's the casings for the different stems uh-huh. that makes it possible to grow. Bamboo is one of the fastest growing above the level of, you know, water. It's the fastest growing plant.
Yeah.
It can grow 2 feet a day. But it mostly does it because it has internodes, and the internodes telescope out kind of every uh-huh. single one
Wait,
of them.
Wait, 2 feet a day, like in the tropics?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. All the bamboo grows to full size in one season, which yeah. means like 3-4 months.
75 feet in one season.
And sometimes 120. Not Oof. Here by us, yeah. but... And from that, it's hard to see, because by the time it really grows fast, it's, you know, 16, 20, 30, 40 feet tall. So you can't really see it unless you are above, you know, on the top level.
Yeah.
Like if you had a window right next to a bamboo grove and you watched out, then it would be really... Some people say that if they are really patient, they can even see it grow. Uh-huh. But it's the added accumulation of all the growth of the different internodes.
Yeah. So what about areas that you're trying to grow vegetables or like neighbors' yards? How do you keep it from spreading into places where you don't want it?
It's fairly easy. Many people are afraid of it because it's not at home, so, and it has a very different growth pattern. Like my neighbor is really scared about it. But what I do is to just dig down at the edge of the bamboo grove where I wanted to end, maybe like 6 to 8 inches, like a shovel full. And then every fall, I go back there and clean out the ditch. And whenever there is root stock coming through, I cut it. And even if I miss it a couple of years, afterwards I cut it and keep the outside area clean. It cannot grow without above ground vegetation. So just the rhizomes in the ground will die unless they have exposure to air, yeah, sunlight and energy.
Yeah.
So this is why this patch that we are working in right now ends suddenly, because there is a ditch there. You can't see it because of all the droppings that the bamboo creates. But then I will come around in the spring and clean it out. Fall. Yeah. Because that's when bamboo has a very particular growth pattern. In the spring it shoots, then it leaves during the summer, and then in the fall it grows roots. Roots don't usually grow otherwise. So if I clean it in the fall, it will be clean until next year. And then late fall, I come around and clean it again.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing.
You're welcome.
I really like sitting in a bamboo patch.
Yeah, it really can be cozy. That's another part, that it slows down the wind, and it creates a nice little area which is well protected.
Yeah.
And that's really good for many of the plants that don't tolerate wind, or that wants a little cozy patch which is surrounded by taller vegetation. But the sun is not blocked.
Yeah.
So there is a garden towards the south there, and it enjoys the protection from two sides.
Cool.
And also next to a chicken coop, it's really great because it disables the hawks, but it doesn't disable the chickens from scratching.
And that was Gabor, my biking and homesteading friend in downtown Amherst. Thanks for the bamboo today, Gabor. Hopefully people riding by the path by my house here in Florence will see what has become of it when my housemate Sarah gets it all put up. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. Got two more things I want to share before that. One is, this is International Dark Sky Week, April 15th through 22nd, 2023. There was a proclamation read at the city council meeting last night for the city of Northampton. Whereas the aesthetic beauty and wonder of a natural night sky is a shared heritage of all creatures on planet Earth, and the experience of standing beneath a starry night sky inspires feelings of wonder and awe, and light pollution has scientifically established economic and environmental consequences, including significant negative impacts to the ecology and human health of all communities. And 80% of the world's population live under a dome of light pollution. Excessive artificial lighting at night that disrupts natural darkness. And these people may never experience, we may never experience the visual wonder or ecological and health benefits of living under a dark sky. And light pollution represents a waste of natural resources amounting to at least $3 billion per year of wasted energy in the United States. Also, Northampton has committed itself to protecting the well-being of wildlife, including pollinating insects, which are adversely affected by light pollution. And the International Dark Sky Association, a globally recognized authority and resource on light pollution, has created International Dark Sky Week to raise awareness and to provide free education, resources, solutions to the public, etc., to encourage the protection of and enjoyment of dark skies and responsible outdoor lighting. That was an abridged version of the proclamation, because I got one more thing I want to share before the time is up. So I'm going to Kentucky next week. We'll be gone for, I don't know, maybe a month. Who knows? Depends on what happens with the bikes for Haiti. But if I don't make it back to another radio show on Out There, I gotta sing. I love hauling trash. I don't think I've done it on Out There yet. I saw it sitting there on the side of the street. I could tell it must have been there about 3 weeks. The wind was smelling strong, like something dead and gone. And I knew It wouldn't be long till it was with me. Yeah, me. Singing, I love hauling trash. Put another bag on my trailer, baby. I love hauling trash. I'm never gonna stop because it never ends. There's compost in the trash and bottles too. Diapers, kitty litter, doggy doo. I know you think they're cute, that I can't dispute. But to me, they're just a source of landfill goo. Do I love hauling trash? Put another bag on my trailer, baby. I love hauling trash. I'm never gonna stop because it never ends. I got my load piled up and all strapped down. I'm headed for the depot across town. I'm just about to go when out comes my friend Bo, saying, one more bag, can you take it? Please don't say no. And I say, I love hauling trash. Put another bag on my trailer, baby. I love hauling trash. I'm never gonna stop because it never ends. Now plastic is the worst of all my woes. From the earth it comes but never goes. The oil barons tell us that we need the things they sell us, while the waste around the world just grows and grows. So I'm still hauling trash. Put another bag on my trailer, baby. I'm still hauling trash. I'm never gonna stop because it never ends. Yeah, I love hauling trash. Riding my bike and finding treasures. I love hauling trash. Rain or snow or windy weather. I love hauling trash. Bricks and sticks and leaves and leather. I love hauling trash. But all I really want to haul is feathers. Thanks to Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. That's all I got for today. You can hear archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there.